Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Hi, John Schwab here from Curtain Call, and welcome to episode 71 of the Curtain Call Theater Podcast, the podcast that brings you backstage as close as you possibly can be, often while the shows are actually happening, to meet the people that make theater happen. And if you are a theater professional, or if you know any, make sure you or they go to curtaincallonline.com and sign up for a free theater professional profile. All you need is an email address. Create a password. It's absolutely free. Just go to www.curtaincallonline.com and sign up today. And now for this week's podcast. This week's episode is a little bit of a throwback, but up to date at the same time. I will explain. Last year, we covered Claire Van Kampen's Fair Nelly and the King after transferred from the Sam Wanamaker Playhouse at Shakespeare's Globe when it went into the Duke of York's Theater in London's West End. Now, when we saw it, I had a huge hunch that this production wouldn't be the last for this company. I mean, it was just too good of a play for New York not to enjoy, and we all know about New York's love affair with Mark Rylance, and well, it's not just New York's, it's everybody's, really. Twelfth Night, Richard III, not to mention Jez Butterworth's Jerusalem. And I was right. Yeah, so on Sunday this week, Farinelli opened on Broadway with many of the original cast returning to reprise their roles, including Mark Rylance as King Philippe the Fifth, and Melody Grove as his loving wife, Queen Isabella. And the reviews have been, well, pretty much raves across the board, with the New York Times' Ben Brantley actually saying, watching Mr. Rylance's Philippe experience Farinelli's voice, we hear what he hears. And an actor and a singer temporarily turn a night at the theater in an anxious city into an Eden beyond worldly care, all the more precious for its evanescence. That is high praise indeed from Brantley. And getting just as many great notices as the play's stars are Sam Crane and Yestyn Davis, who play Farinelli and Farinelli's voice, respectively. Now, if you haven't seen the play, I'll have to explain the plot a little bit so you get what I'm saying. So King Philippe V of Spain is depressed when he has insomnia, and he pretty much stays in his chamber all day. And Queen Isabella, desperately trying to find a cure, hears of Farinelli. Now, Farinelli's a castrato with a voice so divine, it is said that it has the power to captivate all who hear it. So Isabella invites Farinelli to the palace, and even Philippe is astonished when Farinelli sings and begs him to stay. And this gets him out of his cycle of bipolar depression and insomnia. Now, the convention that director John Dove employed here was to have renowned countertenor Yestyn Davis play the castrato Farinelli, and who basically sings the arias standing, literally standing next to Sam Crane. And, you know, it really, really works. And instead of me telling you about it, I'm gonna let the boys explain. Have a listen.
I'm Sam Crane. I play Farinelli. Well, like half of Farinelli. Speaking half.
Yeah.
Carlo, also known as.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And You were at the Wanamaker as well?
Yeah.
How does it differ for you being here?
Well, I guess it's different. The auditorium, obviously, is the Wanamaker, is so kind of, you know, tiny, really. It's like a little room. It's just very, you don't have to really think about. Well, yeah, I guess, you know, you do a bit have to think about sharing it, but not really. Whereas here you've got, obviously we've recreated the Wanamaker on the stage, so you've got those stage seating, so that's kind of the same, but then you also have a stalls going quite far back.
Yes.
I mean, it's not like massive compared to some West End theatres, but still it's so I guess, you know, we have to think about that a bit, certainly to begin with. Well, once you've been doing it for a while, you don't really have to think about that anymore. It's just kind of becomes instinctive. So that's a big difference. And also another big difference, I think, is that when we did it in the Wanamaker, we did it over 4 weeks, but we only did, I think, 15 or 16 performances.
Right.
We were doing it in rep.
Oh, right, I didn't know
so
that.
It's like, you know, two shows, 1 week.
Yeah.
And then three
events. I didn't know it was in rep, though.
Yeah. Whereas here, obviously, we're doing 8 a week.
Mm.
But it's good, you know, it's great. You kind of get on a real roll with it. It's been terrific here. And loads of people got a chance to see it.
Yeah, no, I think it's...
Yeah, whereas in the Wanamaker, obviously, it was, you know, ridiculously kind of exclusive.
Yeah.
I
have... I mean, it's unique, the...
Thanks, Kathy.
The fact that you have Yestin coming and singing next to you, and he's off stage to begin with, and then you come in, and then he sings next to you. Was that always the conceit to me? Was that how?
Yeah, as far as when I first heard about, when John Dove, who directed it first, approached me about it, he did. Yeah, he said, "Look, don't worry, you're not going to have to sing." and I think it was there also, kind of integral in the character, someone who, and in the story of why he goes, it's someone who is not kind of comfortable with that side of himself. This. Performative personality, and the sort of public figure that was huge, you know, a kind of massive global celebrity, a sort of Michael Jackson equivalent. And I think you see that, you can see equivalents to that in big name performers, you know, throughout history, you know, when they create a kind of personality. But there's obviously a real person behind that as well. And I think with Farinelli, so he's, his name is Carlo Broschi.
Yeah.
And he, I guess sort of understandably, was very troubled by his status and his celebrity and the reaction he got from people. And also because it's all tied up with this sort of trauma he went through being castrated at age 10 years old. And that's what's led him to have this amazing gift. So it's a very kind of complicated relationship he has with his success, and I think that's part of the reason why he wanted to leave it all behind and sing privately. So it kind of makes sense to have that split, I think, just in terms of the character and the story. It was funny, I remember when we were rehearsing at first, I saw that Amy Winehouse film.
Yes.
And she said something in it that really struck me. It was like, she was saying, "I just want to go and sing in just a little room with a few people and be about the music." Which is obviously not when you're
Amy
singing.
Winehouse,
exactly. When there's thousands and thousands of people clamouring for you and screaming when you go on stage. Yeah. You don't even start and they'll. It's like sort of Beatlemania. You know, it's. You know, how do you deal with that?
One thing I was talking to Melody about, the Mark looks like he's having so much fun on stage. The character is in such a dark place.
Yeah.
But he's got a real twinkle in his eye.
Yeah.
And is he? How fun is he to play with?
He's really fun to play with, because he's very encouraging of, you know, doing things slightly differently all the time.
Yeah.
Finding new things and not kind of thinking, right, this is the way it's got to be. And if, you know, just so that is really fun.
Yeah.
Because you never quite know what you're going to do or what he's going to do. Mm. Or, and yeah, so it's really fun.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Thank you so much for your time.
And my name is Yestin Davis, which, for all those who don't ask about Yestin, it's IESTYN. There's no L in it. And
but it doesn't really matter.
It does matter, because I have a website with pictures, and you'll go on that website. And I sing the role of Farinelli, which means I go on stage and stand next to Sam, and we do a double act, and a bit like, I don't know, Little and Large. And we, yeah, we do, I sing all the arias and give musical voice to Farinelli. Yeah, yeah.
And how, I mean, was that always the conceit, you know? I mean,
well, I think lots of people ask that question because, you know, they see Mark as a sort of eccentric one on stage and the crazy one, and actually Sam plays Farinelli very, quite reserved,
yeah.
because well, quite rightly as well, because I think Farinelli, the extroverts, the singer, the on stage, and that's what the play highlights actually, yeah, as well, is that he's Carlo Broschi.
Have a good one, guys.
Yeah. See ya. Cheers, Hoss. But yeah, I think it was always conceived that it was a play with music,
yeah,
and it wasn't until the first rehearsal where John Dove and Claire sort of thought, well, how are we going to do this? And of course, if I turned up and sort of been a complete idiot on stage and fallen over and stuff, they would have been like, we've got to put him off stage and just sing and do something like that. But fortunately, I could walk and didn't have a face for radio, so it was fine.
Right.
So I basically, you know, convinced them it was okay to stand on stage, and then they came up with the idea that the two work quite well next to each other. And I think it's just, I don't know, it seems to work after about the first hour, people are like, oh, I get it. Because I've had a lot of people come to the show, they hear me sing off stage,
yeah,
and then Sam walks on, they're like, oh no, there must be something, he might be ill, oh, I've come to the wrong show. And one show where a man went, even at the interval, complained. He said, I've paid to come and hear Yestin, and it sounds like him, but it's not him. It doesn't look like him. It's definitely not. And they're like, it is. And no, it's not.
I mean, it is really effective.
Yeah, no.
Like, I mean, as an audience member, we saw it about 6 weeks ago, and you come on, and very quickly.
Yeah.
Especially, if, I guess, if you're theatre literate as well. But I think even if you're not, very quickly your brain accepts it and goes, that's the voice. I mean, yeah, that's the act. I mean, it is.
And also, you got, it's, if I came on and started speaking, you would be like, no, this doesn't, yeah, work. But the fact that you come on singing and there's music, which is at a different speed from conversation, which, yeah, is happening on stage.
Yeah. Technically, it's got to be slight. I mean, it's a bigger house, right? It's,
yeah. You're not mad on the acoustic at the Wanamaker
playhouse,
are you?
No, the Wanamaker. This singing is dreadful compared to the Wanamaker.
It's quite. As a musician, it's quite dead in the house, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's, you know, it's designed for talking.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not fun for music at all. In fact, I don't. Theatres generally aren't fun. I mean, opera houses are sort of designed for that.
Yeah,
and concert halls. The Wanamaker's all wood, which helps. All wooden seats,
yeah,
wooden floors, where there's a lot,
yeah,
more cloth here.
And yes, Niamh.
Yeah.
Is this, how does this differ for you compared to, you know, opera and you know?
Well, it's closer in form to sort of 17th century operas that we had in England, like Purcell and stuff, where they were called semi-operas, where basically there'd be a play, or even in Shakespearean times, where, you,
yeah,
know, and the musician would come on and sing a song and double a character. So it's a bit like that, and it's somewhere between doing a concert and doing an opera. You know, I suppose in an opera, everything on stage is set to music. There's, you know, very rarely you've got any sort of dialogue. And you're also not so much competing, but the whole evening is about singers on stage. So in a sense, it's easier for me to relax and enjoy this and do what I want because I'm the only singer.
Yeah.
But also it's been really enjoyable because you know that this audience hasn't necessarily come to see an opera. They've come to see a,
yeah,
play. And,
yeah,
and lots of people have come to see Colin and Mark. Yes. See what I did there? And there's a nice surprise to sort of introduce them to something without forcing it down their throat, which you would do if you said, come and see an opera. And,
yeah,
they sort of have to judge it. Because they come out and say, oh, I really like that. And then they can nip across the road to English National Opera and see something there. And it's different, it's, of course, in terms of how much I do of it. Because in the classical music world, the kind of diary we have is that you would rarely do, because you do a lot more singing, I suppose, in a show or a concert, we rarely do two shows back to back at,
yeah,
all, or two in a day.
Yeah.
I mean, I've only ever done that kind of thing when we've done an opera with a dance company who need to dance every day. But that's really rare.
Yeah.
And singers, you take 2 days off at the least. So this has been, when I've had to do sort of 8 show weeks, it's been quite hard. And I didn't have to do it, but I had a choice. And I thought, well, I'm feeling confident about it.
Yeah.
It's not a huge amount to sing. I get a lot of time off in between the arias and stuff.
Yeah.
And we're also not doing the fully fleshed out arias. Plus, it's only 5 instruments, it's not a full orchestra.
Yeah.
And you're not having to project over the orchestra into a big opera house. So
yeah,
there's pros and cons about it. But it'd be something I think about if we ever do it again, about how to fit in, because I've got normal work as well.
Yeah, of course.
I recited last night, concerts here and there, and you need days off before those as well. So it's interestingly, I haven't got bored because you've got actors acting and doing a lot of different things with the dialogue, which you can't do in music so much.
Yeah,
people always talk about music, you know, you can reinterpret it and you can do stuff, but there's a certain limitation when you've got a conductor and an orchestra and you're playing written music.
Yeah,
it's like them being given an exact rhythm to do with the words, they get really frustrated after a while. And when you think I've done about 60 of these and I'm singing, so I can't imagine doing 57 of some of these arias, 58 of these arias. It hasn't really hit me as dull or anything like that.
Yeah.
And yes, I've sung them now, 58.
It was amazing.
Sam Crane and Yestyn Davis there, who are appearing right now in Farinelli and the King until the end of March at the Belasco Theatre on Broadway. Now, if you couldn't see it here in London, why not take a trip to the Big Apple? It'd be worth it. That's all I'm saying. Now, before we wrap up here, if you are a theater professional, I just want to let you know again that it's easy to join the network built by theater professionals for theater professionals. It grows every day. We have 18,000 profiles up there at the moment, and we have 4,000 active users. Join them. Start getting your profile out there for people to see. Start connecting to the world of theater. And that's for everyone. It doesn't have to be UK-based. It's everyone. It's a global platform. You can follow us on all the socials. It's Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Curtain Call. We'd love to hear from you. If you have any suggestions for the podcast, just get in touch with us via any of the social media platforms I just mentioned, or write to me at curtaincallonline.com. And you can find us on iTunes and Stitcher. You can even find us on Spotify these days. Now, it leaves me to say a huge thank you to the company of Farinelli and the King. I wish them all the best on Broadway. I know it will be a hugely successful run. It's a brilliant play. Well done to all involved. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Curtain Call Theater Podcast, and I will catch you all a little later this week with a Christmas bonus episode. Bye.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.